Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vanam Vrindavanam Namo Pashavyam Navakananam Gopa Gopi Gavam Sevyam Punyadri Trinavirudham Vanam Vrindavanam Namo Ashavyam Navakananam Gopa Gopi Gavam Sevyam Punyadri Trinavirudham Vanam Vrindavanam Namo Pasavyam Navakananam Gopa Gopi Gavam Sevyam Punyadri Trinavirudham. Please chant. Ladies, please. Anyone else? synonyms, vanam, another forest, Vrindavan nam, named Vrindavan, Pashavyam, a very suitable place for maintenance of the cows and other animals. Navakananam. There are many new garden-like places. Gopa Gupi Gavam. For all the cowherd men, the members of their families, and the cows. Sevyam. A very happy, very suitable place. Punya, Adri. There are nice mountains. Trina, plants. Virudam, and creepers. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Between Nandishvar and Mahavana is a place named Vrindavana. This place is very suitable because it is lush with grass, plants, and creepers for the cows and other animals. One of the cowherd men is speaking this at this time. It has nice gardens and tall mountains and is full of facilities for the happiness of all the gopas and gopis and our animals. Please repeat. Between Nandishvar and Mahavana is a place named Vrindavana. This place is very suitable because it is lush with grass, plants, and creepers for the cows and other animals. It has nice gardens and tall mountains and is full of facilities for the happiness of all the gopas and gopis and our animals. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Vrindavan is situated between Nandishvar and Mahavana. Formerly, the cowherd men had shifted to Mahavan, but still there were disturbances. Therefore, the cowherd men selected Vrindavan, which was between the two villages, and decided to go there. Omagyana timirandasya yananjana shalakaya shakshun unmanitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. So here we see that the cowherd men who are speaking at this point are very concerned about the fact that their children, as well as Krishna and Balaram, are always in jeopardy. They're always in danger because some demon is always coming by. Srila Prabhupada mentions a few verses down that these demons would not come just once a day or once a week, but they would come several times a day. So, of course, the understanding of the cowherd men is not that Krishna is God. They never think that. It goes against the very rasa with which they have come to this world, by which they worship and glorify and serve Krishna. Their rasa is the paternal rasa. And the children is, of course, the friendship rasa as children. So a rasa is a particular mood. It's a relationship that we have with the Lord. Generally speaking, as in the Christian Judeo principles or tradition, God is supreme, and God is to be venerated, God is to be glorified, God is to be looked up to with awe and reverence. He's omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent. And that's generally the extent of it. He's also looked up to as a father, someone who gives, someone who protects, someone who can help. However, in our tradition, there are other rasas. The one I just mentioned is the combination of neutrality and servitorship. But then there is friendship, that one may want to love the Lord as a friend. For example, the little cowherd boys that we find in this chapter, they see Krishna certainly not as God. They see him as their friend, as their playmate, someone to frolic with, someone to have fun with. What kind of fun? They do all sorts of things that you would never think God would do, because after all, he's maintaining this whole universe. He's maintaining it. He's sustaining it. He's protecting it. He's guiding it. And yet here he is playing with these little cowherd boys, and they take blankets and put it over their heads, and they play bullfighting, and they butt each other's heads. They play tag, hide-and-go-seek. They jump in ponds after the frogs. They chase after bird shadows. They climb up the trees and pull the tails of monkeys. The monkeys run away. They run after the monkeys. This is play. This is kids' play. Many of us may have done things like this. And so one begins to wonder, if you try to impart this knowledge to persons who have no idea, they say, this can't be God. God's there. He's running the universe. What is he doing? Playing with little kids and diving into ponds for frogs and playing with monkeys and running after bird shadows. Doesn't God have anything better to do than this? So they don't understand that God has many faces and many forms, infinitely. And he's there not only to please those who want to worship him in awe and reverence, but those who wish to worship him as a friend. For example, the little cowherd boys whom I've just described, how they worship him. Srila Prabhupada mentions that these little boys who we see in such a playful and frolicsome mood, always having fun, always jumping with joy, running, having little games of who can touch Krishna first. Sometimes Krishna gets 50 yards ahead of them, and they have little running races, who can touch Krishna first. And then sometimes they get there almost at the same time, and they start arguing, I touched him first. And Krishna says, it's okay. It doesn't matter who touched first. You see, because this is all their devotional love, that they want to touch Krishna. They wrestle with Krishna. They play with Krishna. They duel with Krishna with sticks. Who can touch the chest? The one who gets the stick on the chest, well, then he gets carried by the one got the stick on the chest, or I should say the one who gets the stick on the chest, he has to carry the winner. So sometimes these cowherd boys, they get on Krishna's shoulders, and poor Krishna, he has to lift these little 50-pound children, and the children say, come on, run, faster. And this is the Supreme Lord ordering him. But when you're a child and you're in the cowherd boy mentality, that's exactly what Krishna is enjoying. And he loves it. We cannot think that because Krishna is maintaining or managing the world in the ultimate sense, that he doesn't like to play. He doesn't like... Everything that we do comes from the source, namely Krishna. We like to play, its source is Krishna. We like to parent, the source is Krishna. We like to venerate, the source is Krishna. Krishna himself venerates Lord Vishnu. Praise to Lord Vishnu. So all these different cowherd boys and cowherd women, they don't want to think of Krishna as the Supreme Lord. They're always thinking, and it states this again and again and again, that when Krishna does something miraculous or amazing or astonishing, for example, there's a big forest fire, and then Krishna takes a deep breath and swallows the whole fire. Well, who is doing that? So their understanding is that Lord Vishnu has empowered our Krishna to do that. Or the place becomes filled with poisonous fumes. Krishna has to fight with the Kaliya serpent. They're frightened that Krishna is going to be smothered in the coils of Kaliya. And just at the time when it looks like they're going to die, Krishna sees their love, their devotion, the intensity of their affection, their desire to want to see me again and not dead. is so strong. If I don't get out of this, they will die. So deep is their love. So intense is their love. So, of course, at that time, Krishna just goes like this, and he jumps up on Kali's head, and he starts doing dances. And everybody is so relieved because Krishna is now in the upper position. He's now in the winning position. So this is how it generally goes. That everyone there is worshipping Krishna in their own way. Nanda Maharaj, he's seeing Krishna. He regards Krishna as his son. Yashoda sees him as her son. Who needs her protection? He's protecting the whole world. All creatures, all entities. But she's thinking, no, he's my little son. He needs me. I need to protect him. I need to teach him. I need to educate him. He does naughty things. He steals butter from the neighbors. He's going to grow up to be a big thief. I have to stop that now. I have to tie him to a mortar. And Krishna says, oh, now I'll do something even more naughty than what I did before, which is breaking the butter pot, which and all the butter and yogurt poured out. So Krishna is having lots of fun, and he's enjoying the way the different gopis and gopas and children are expressing their love for him. And he's relishing it. He's tasting it. He's delighting in it. When Mother Yashoda is trying to get the rope around Krishna's waist, and it's always 2 inches or 2 finger lengths short, and he's looking as if, who's doing this? He acts like he doesn't know what it's all about, which is even more humorously amazing. And so she's taking more and more ropes and trying to get that rope around his waist and around. It's already around the mortar. She wants to tie him up. This is his punishment for being so naughty. She wants to make him behave, grow up to be a respectable youngster, a respectable adult, someone who will be glorified and not condemned. This is her love. That she wants him to grow up correctly. Why do you do this? Why do you go into other persons' homes and steal their butter? Why do you do this? You have your own home. We have plenty of butter here. So, I like to. And he doesn't have to give an explanation. He's enjoying watching the neighbors when they go chasing after him. On the one hand, they think of him as a little thief. But on the other hand, they're loving the thief. So, on the one hand, they enjoy his thieving, his stealing, because they get a chance to look at him. They get a chance to see him. They get a chance to think about him. And in thinking about him, some kind of unusual ecstasy percolates through their heart. They're supposed to be feeling angry, and they are, but it's a very mixed kind of anger. It's filled with love, filled with devotion, filled with ecstasy, filled with bliss. And so on the one hand, they're telling Mother Yashoda, please take care of your boy, keep him away from our place. He's doing all kinds of naughty things here. He steals our butter, he urinates on the floor, he pinches our baby's cheeks. Can't you corral him? Can't you control him? She says, why do you do this, Krishna? I like it. That's his only explanation. That's his fun. That's where he enjoys himself. And he enjoys experiencing and watching and feeling the love that is coming from Mother Yashoda when she tries to make him into a good boy. He enjoys the love that Nanda Maharaj expresses to him when he teaches Krishna how to tend the cows, how to milk, how to milk the cows. He's enjoying all of this. Because that's, Krishna doesn't need our food. He doesn't need clothing. He doesn't need shelter. He doesn't need nice words. He doesn't need any of these things. He doesn't need anything. He's blissful all the time. But he likes to add to the bliss, increase it like an ocean wave. You get 5-foot waves, 10-foot waves, 20-foot waves, 50-foot waves, 100-feet waves. So he likes to increase his bliss. And that comes through the pure, loving service that his devotees shower upon him. And his ecstasy continues to grow. And, for example, when he's with his gopi girlfriends, and they do something, they say something, or they may massage his feet, or they may play a beautiful musical melody, Or they may prepare some nice cake for him. And when Krishna tastes the cake, or feels the pleasure from his feet being massaged, and they see a smile on his face, then their face lights up with also a smile. It's irresistible. And when Krishna sees their smile, his smile becomes broader. His heart begins to beat more strongly. And it becomes kind of a competition, each one feeding upon the other, increasing each other's ecstasy, increasing each other's bliss. But they're not thinking of ecstasy. That's not the idea. They're thinking of each other's pleasure, because that's what love is all about. It's about relieving pain and about giving pleasure. And that's all they want to do, is give Krishna more and more pleasure in whichever way they can. They can sing with him. They can dance with him. They can cook for him. They can play music for him. They can do all of these things. And their only object in love is to keep increasing Krishna's pleasure. Because that's all they know. And that's all they want to know. And that is the true goal of life. That's what all of us are here trying to do. And it's done unmotivatedly, in the sense that they're not looking for a reward. They're not looking for a return. Okay, Krishna, I massaged your feet. Now make sure that you make sure we have enough money tomorrow. You know, when I go out selling the butter, make sure somebody buys it. It's not fruitive. It's not that way. Their only concern is, prayers, please. Oh, Lord, they don't know Krishna's God. Please, somehow, tomorrow, enable me, allow me, help me, arrange for me to be able to serve Krishna. So here we have in this particular verse, the coward men a little bit concerned. They're worried. They're in anxiety because every day some demon is coming. Putana came. Krishna was sucking her breast, and she had come to poison him. And then she grew bigger and bigger and bigger, trying to shake Krishna off because he didn't let go of the nipple. And he just sucked out the life air. And then she just plops down on the ground and died there. And then Trinarvata, when Mother Yashoda had left Krishna on the ground because he felt too heavy, so he needed a little rest. So she went inside. Of course, this was a nice arrangement by Krishna to get Mother Yashoda out of the picture, so that, because she knew the Trinarvata demon was, he knew it was hanging around wanting to bring him up into the sky. And he also knew that one of his purposes was to kill those demons. So when she left him alone, Trinarvata demon grabbed him, put him close to the chest, and flew up into the sky and started whirling around, dust all over the place. And poor Krishna, he's just sightseeing. He's enjoying the view. Maybe some of us, when we first went up into an airplane the first time, and you look down and you see all these big buildings, now they look so like tiny little buildings. Everything's changed. The carts, the cows, the monkeys, everything. So and now everything is, he's up there in the sky. And Trinarvata is planning to kill Krishna and eat him. That's his goal. And when the coward men and women, they see that Krishna's been taken up. What's going to happen to our Krishna? And then what does Krishna do? He quells their anxiety. First thing, he makes himself, his little body, heavier and heavier and heavier and heavier, till Trinarvata, he can't hold on anymore. He can't keep himself afloat, aflight. And so what happens is that he tries to shake Krishna off, but Krishna's got his hands around his neck. And he's squeezing, and he's squeezing. So Trinarvata, he's having a rough time. So finally, they're plunging down. Trinarvata can't fly anymore. Plunging down, Krishna lets go, and boom! He hits the stone, and that's the end of Trinarvata. And Krishna hits the ground. And all the milkmaids and the gopis, gopas, they go, "Are you all right, Krishna? Look at them, let's see them. They're looking for scratches. They couldn't find a scratch on him." Oh, Lord Vishnu, he protected him. Thank you, Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu's right in front of them. But no, their ras has to continue, that Krishna needs them. Krishna's helpless. Krishna, he was just protected. But what if one day maybe Lord Vishnu went to sleep and he didn't protect Krishna? What would happen then? So we've got to get out of this place. We've got to move. Because all these demons, they're coming here. Because they didn't even think, well, the demons can go to another place too. I mean, after all, they can fly. They can change their forms. They didn't think like that. All they know is we have to protect. Our Balaram, our Krishna, all our children are being endangered, jeopardized, possibly harmed. Fortunately, we have the grace of Lord Vishnu, but maybe one day we can't predict what Vishnu's going to do. He's his own person. So let's get out of here. So that's what happens. They get all their things together. They get it on the bullock carts. And then they move to where? To where? Yes, to Vrindavan. And of course, the demons come there. The first. Anybody remember the first demon that starts to try to kill Krishna in Vrindavan? Starts with a V. Vatsasura. He mingles with the cows. He makes himself into looking like a calf. And so he mingles. So Krishna sees that. Of course, he's omniscient. He knows what's going on. He says to Balaram, kind of gives him a nudge. He says, demon. He says, I know. So then what happens is that Krishna gets near him. The demon was trying to get behind Krishna so that he could possibly be in an advantageous position so they can jump on him and kill him. But Krishna gets into the advantageous position, grabs his ankles, and begins to whirl and whirl and whirl and whirl him around, flings him up into the tree, boom, hits the tree, down on the ground, and all the fruits come down with him. That was part of the plan, so that all the cowherd boys would get a chance to eat all those delicious, sweet, lovable fruits. And there he is. And all the little boys, wow, Krishna, well done, well done. Because they're also thinking that Krishna must be, he's guided by the Lord also. So this is a very remarkable situation. All of them are playing with Krishna. All are or protecting Krishna or guiding Krishna. In the case of Arjuna, he's also in friendship mentality. And they go out, Arjuna and Krishna, they shoot arrows together. You know, they practice targeting together. They go out chariot riding together. And they do many things together that warriors do. You know, they wrestle together, go swimming together, all those things. So, as Prabhupada again says, these boys, these elders, these parents have been performing devotional service for millions and millions of years to get that position. Sometimes I hear devotees say, well, you know, I'm going to be a cowherd boy. You know, just like that. That's all it takes. You know, just want to be it. Good to want. But don't only desire, you have to deserve, as Srila Prabhupada so nicely says. Deserving means that I give myself to Krishna. I surrender myself to Krishna. Surrender my body, surrender my mind, surrender my my thoughts, my feelings, my intelligence, my wealth, my words. I surrender all these to Krishna for His pleasure. And I never feel that I'm giving anything because I owe Him so much. That's how we have to be thinking. Sometimes I hear devotees saying, oh, you know, I did so much for Krishna and I don't have anything to show for it. What kind of talk is that? Krishna is loading us with blessings. Just even all of us sitting here. There are places in the world where people can't just sit quietly, calmly, listen to a talk. Bombs are dropping. People are attacking. Mosques are being broken into. People are going in with machine guns. There are places where hardly people are hardly even eating. Threadbare, no clothes, no shelter, living out on the streets. So Krishna is giving us a lot. And we have all been, to some degree, greater or lesser, sinners. But Krishna sees, well, they're doing devotional service. And as they continue to do devotional service, they will become more and more purified. And they will see that this sinful activity is wrong and it's no good. And it goes against what I want. And they'll want to do only what I want, Krishna will say. And they'll give it up completely. It takes time. He knows that. So He doesn't just accuse them and give them state to them that yes, you sin, yeah, you go to hell forever now. It never says that. Rather, he makes adjustments for us. You take one step towards Krishna, he takes 10 or 100 towards us. Every little bit of devotional love and service that we perform is savored, relished, held, treasured, cherished to the heart. Krishna never forgets it. As small as it may appear to us, everything is big to Krishna because he wants us all back. Like a mother, a father, your child wanders away. You're in the supermarket and you can't find your child. You say, "Oh, Jimmy, Bobby, where are you?" He doesn't answer. Maybe somebody kidnapped him. The kidnapping that are going on. They actually hang out. Sometimes a mother leaves a child in a back seat of a car. And the kidnapper looks around. They have these pass keys. They get into the cars, take the kid, bring him down to Mexico. These things happen. But here we are in a peaceful, calm, quiet, happy, joyous situation. And this is all due to the mercy of Krishna and Srila Prabhupada. Without Srila Prabhupada, there wouldn't be any Krishna for us. It would just be another name of another quote-unquote God. But Krishna showed us Srila Prabhupada showed us who Krishna is, what he wants, how we can please him, how we can serve him, and by so serving him, how to draw closer to him, how to become one with him in love, in purpose, in goal. And when we do that, Krishna is pleased. This is how to please Krishna, to be one with him in goal. To be one with goal, meaning what does Krishna want for this world? He wants everyone to be Krishna conscious. So whatever we do, whether it's book distribution, whether it's prasadam distribution, whether it's cleaning the temple, whether it's serving out the prasadam, food, anything that brings person closer and closer to Krishna, that pleases him. And when he's pleased, he being in the heart, as he says, yet in this body there is another, a transcendental enjoyer who is the Lord, the supreme proprietor, who exists as the overseer and permitter and is known as the supersoul. The supersoul who is within, he sees that and he responds to it. Krishna is not a dull stone. He responds to our efforts to please him, enable him to feel greater and greater, more and more joyfulness and happiness. So he responds to this. And we feel that response in the form of any one of the different ecstatic symptoms. Sometimes we're stunned. Or we may be perspiring profusely. Or we may horripilate. That's when the hairs on the neck and on the arms, they jump up. Or the color of our skin may become blanched or whitened. Or we may not be able to speak. We may get tongue-tied. Like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in at the Rath Yatra. He couldn't speak. He couldn't say Jagannath. You remember that passage? He goes, can't talk. That's one of the ecstatic symptoms. He was crying buckets of tears. The devotees were diving for the tears and rubbing them into their bodies and into their heads. So this is what it's about. So these gopas, they want to protect their children. They want to get out of this area where they're now at, and they want to go to Vrindavan, where they hope everything will be peaceful and calm, but it's just the opposite. I already said Vatsasura. Who comes after Vatsasura? Huh? I don't know. Vatsasura is the first one in Vrindavan. Hey, you know, can we have this at the end? I'll ask the question. Generally, it's not the proskas that Prabhupada encouraged us to interrupt when the speaker is speaking, but I'll be glad to take your... No, I didn't ask for any question. It was a question... I did say that what is the next, what after Vatsasura, who is the next demon who comes to Vrindavan? So what was your answer, please? Because that's my question. Well, I already said that. I said Vatsasura was the first one. No. Check the book. You'll see. I reviewed this last night. The next one, Vatsasura, after Vatsasura comes, come on, it starts with a B. Yeah, Bakasura. That's correct. So, therefore, the demons came there as well. And that's an interesting story, and we just don't have enough time for it. Maybe at some other time. But in any event, I want to just conclude this and sum it up by saying that Srila Prabhupada has given us this marvelous opportunity to draw closer and closer to the Supreme Lord through the process of pure devotional service. And if we feel we're not making enough progress, we need to stick to it. We need to stay with it. We need to be steady at it. We need to persist at it. And Krishna sees that persistence. He sees that dedication. He sees that devotion. And as a result of it, he blesses us. And more blessings come in the form of graces and mercies, so that a devotee becomes to feel, instead of down or depressed or upset or any of that, more and more as we grow, as we develop, as we get higher in spiritual consciousness, the result is that we are feeling happier and happier. We want to serve more and more. Every opportunity that we see is an opportunity to please Krishna, to glorify Krishna, to honor Krishna, to worship Krishna. So even if it's picking up a piece of trash just outside the door here, it's laying there. Krishna wouldn't like it. Prabhupada wouldn't like it. So we pick it up and put it. We're not too big. We're not too high. Not so great. I'm a this. I'm a that. I don't pick up papers. That's for the trash man. We don't take that position. This is not a union here. In the union, that's how they think. I don't do that. I don't do that. I'm not getting paid for that. You want me to pick up that? You got to pay me for that. That's their idea. But a devotee sees anything and everything as an opportunity to give pleasure and to Krishna. So I want to thank everyone for listening, for hearing. Are there any questions at this point about any of the things that I've said? Controversial issues that have to do with ISKCON, we can take that at another time. But at this point, anything which I have said which has either confused anyone or has you feel it's not correct, I'll do my best to either correct myself or correct what you say. So are there any questions? No questions? Everybody agrees? Well, not bad. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. All glories to the assembled devotees. Hare Krishna.
It sounds a little similar. I don't remember the calendar. I don't remember.